Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined today by my buddy. You guys can't see it, but a freshly shaved John Daigle from RotoWorld.com. He looks like a brand new man. Nothing like his avatar on Twitter right now. Bringing John in to discuss right now is your pinned tweet on Twitter right now, John. Your consensus top 10 fantasy fades article. How are you doing? How are you enjoying the beginning of best ball season?
I actually feel sort of bad for you because I didn't even warn you. I just kind of, after the pod, the Roto World Football Podcast yesterday, we record on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I just got sick of it. And I was like, yeah, it's time for a change. And so I just got rid of it, jumped into the video room with you, and here I am now. As opposed to looking 60, I look probably 18 again. But no, everything's going well. It's getting a little warmer, so it's time to shed the beard. Plus, like with the regular season and apparently June mini camps approaching, It's going to be that time where we all start getting scraggly and tired again. So why not just get in the workouts and the flexing and the freshness right now? But best ball season, of course, like everything's going really well. I was in rooms in March. And so I've gotten to experience a lot of the changes that happened.
The shift.
Pre and post. And I know some people question it. I don't know. I'm curious how you feel about it. I literally like love pre-draft best ball. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, they're awesome. I have done three post-draft. So great. It's been a month since the draft, and I've completed three, but I had done four dynasty drafts and like, I think 16 best balls before the draft. Like, and also part of that is like a mental health break for me, where it's just like, if I literally am grinding football that hard for 12 months a year, like it's not going to be good. And also, you know, we have more DFS now, right? Like there's more stuff going on to like in April, there was nothing to bet on, right? There was nothing. So it's been a little bit better to have more stuff going on. But the reason why I was super interested in doing this podcast on your fades article is I disagree with all of the high stakes players on fading Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think they're all wrong. I think they are all missing the forest for the trees. Clyde Edwards-Helaire by like week 6 or 7 is going to be getting 6 targets a game and 12 carries a game in an offense where like, I mean, we could literally just see anyone be good there, right? I think Jonathan Stewart could come in off the street right now for the Kansas City Chiefs and be a top 12 running back in fantasy. I actually do agree with the point that Jake Benetti made in your article, which is that, you know, Damian is like a fine player. Like Damian has performed really well in limited roles in Kansas City in the past. Two things. First, guys never played a full season. Like literally going back to his time at Oklahoma, he's never made it through a full season. And then two, he's an unrestricted free agent after this year. And they showed last year with LeSean McCoy, like when they were ready, they just made McCoy a game day inactive. And I could see them doing that to Damian this season. So that's kind of where I'm approaching Clyde Edwards-Helaire from.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack here.
Yes.
First of all, let me take a step back and quickly explain the process behind this.
Yes, please do.
You, myself, a lot of other people have probably enjoyed Bob McGinn's draft series for some time now. And especially in the offseason, I think it's really impactful to do something like you did actually recently. You did an article on the three tenets of approaching drafts and floors and ceilings of players, and it was amazing. And so, like, writers, when they're getting in the industry, the offseason, I feel, is the best time to try to impact and disrupt. Like, you don't just want to, you know, I understand what pays the rent and the bread and butter, and that's your rankings and all that. But you really, that's the time to try to hammer it home and shift. And so I thought, okay, what if I could just bring this approach and take, essentially steal for Bob McGinn, but treat it as fantasy? And so I attempted to poll 27 to 35 players. However, with jobs still going on, with kids still running around locked in homes, a league's worth, 12 got back to me. So once the 12 got back to me that I was confident in, I just ran with that. Some didn't want their comments in. Some only wanted to give me a few rankings. But whatever the case, I had them give a point system, 10 points to your highest fade player this season, all the way down to one. And then what you're talking about, the consensus number one with the most points was Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I agree with you to extent. I still think, so I'm guessing since his ADP right now is the mid-second, that means you're probably taking him at the end of the first or like the second round turn, right?
So this is, yes, right? End of first round, beginning of the second round. And this is why. I'm comparing him to Joe Mixon, Nick Chubb, Todd Gurley, who like, oh my gosh, no one would take Todd Gurley there. Go look at the min maxes on Fantasy Mojo. Like, people are taking him high in the second round. And I think that his floor is definitely way lower than Chubb and Mixon, right? Those guys are getting minimum 200 carries as long as they stay healthy for 16 games. There's no other outcome. I think that it is possible in like a 90th percentile season for CEH that he out-targets Mixon and Jacobs combined, because Chubb is going to lose all of these targets to Kareem Hunt. We already saw it. So last year, once Kareem Hunt returned from suspension in week 10, Nick Chubb saw 13 targets total over that time frame. Like, he basically was removed from a role in the passing game. Josh Jacobs was a guy we thought would be used a ton in the passing game last year, and he was intermittently, but they, you know, they still used DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard a lot. And then this offseason, they recommit themselves to Jalen Richard, giving him a multi-year extension. They draft Lynn Bowden Jr. And then if that wasn't enough, not only do they do that, they also signed Devontae Booker, who's like a pure third down pass catching back off of once he got cut from Denver. So I'm really down on Jacobs' role in terms of the passing game. And I'm really high on what Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be over the second half of the season.
All fair points. I will say, while I do disagree with his mid-second ADP, I also think it's a little early. I understand that he has league-winning potential, and he could be the guy we're talking about at number one overall next year. And so when playing best ball, like, it's totally fine to do, like most people, you know, hear about the portfolios and the stocks and percentages or whatever. Like, best ball is so much fun. Rich Rebar, one of his things he always says is, rather than playing like the $35 FFPC leagues, he would rather just take those $5 and play in seven leagues in like best ball 10s or something, because that gives him a higher ROI. So for people like scared to do that, like, even if you take $5 and make that five leagues on drafters and just in $1, totally fine. And if you're doing that, I think it's important to somehow get exposure to Edwards-Helaire, since we are talking about him as a potential league winner. And so the way I've been doing it personally is pretty much sacrificing either Kamara or Derrick Henry at the 5-6 turn in FFPC, grabbing Travis Kelce there since it is tight end premium.
Yeah.
And then coming back, and like I said, I still think it's early, but I know I need shares. I have to have them at some point. So coming back, getting Edwards-Helaire, and then hoping Mahomes comes back in the mid-third round and
just
trying
grabbing
to do
that ultra stack.
Rather than Tyreek Hill at the end of the first round, it's that three stack with Edwards-Helaire instead.
I actually think that Edwards-Helaire profiles really similarly to Miles Sanders last season. And, I mean, you got a huge discount on Miles Sanders last season, right? He was a fifth-round draft pick, you know, for most of the offseason, who was sort of useful. Like, he was like, to quote Cecil Lammy from Football Guys, he was very much a what-the-heck flex type guy for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. Then, obviously, after the Jordan Howard stinger injury, he just, you know, it was just rocket ships for Miles Sanders. And so I think this one points to, you know, the market just getting a little bit better, a little bit smarter in terms of how they evaluate players. Like, Miles Sanders probably should have been drafted a little bit higher last season. But also, it's just a reaction. I'm writing an article right now on just the utter thirst that there is for running backs. Just like, if you're a running back who can reasonably project for 200 carries, you're going to go in the first three rounds. Like, I mean, Le'Veon Bell did not have a run over 20 yards last season, and he is going in the, you know, late second round. Todd Gurley, this is actually true. I had to look it up because I didn't even actually believe it when I thought it. Todd Gurley is signed to a one-year $5.5 million contract with no guarantees, no options for next year, nothing. And he's going in the second round. Like, he's not any different than Ito Smith.
It's so funny because I could be wrong here, but dude, I can't remember a time in the last decade where so many one-year contract or so many undrafted free agents, like ahead of next year, right? Like your Damian Williams and Marlon Mack are suddenly pitted against tremendous rookies with high draft capital. So there's that, making these conundrums even more of a conundrum. And then I can't recall as many like shaky-kneed veterans, Dusty as we call them now, with ample opportunity. And so it's just a weird combination.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's such a weird year in the first four rounds. And then now everyone is saying, and it's true, by the way, everyone is saying, oh, like you got to get your running backs, even like a four RB start in some cases, in the first five rounds. And so now that everyone's saying that, I've been trying new ways as like, I'm kind of just getting ready for the main event in August, which for anyone that doesn't know.
The best, yeah.
Yeah, $1,800 buy-in, and then we're all shooting for a $500K grand prize. Like, if I'm prepping for that, I'm trying to actually see if I'm comfortable with Kareem Hunt, James White, Boston Scott, like eight of those guys, because I think that's what's going to happen if you're trying to gain an edge on a bigger field.
Yeah, so I have some of this running back data to drop because I'm writing this article on just the idea that so like literally you hear everywhere like zero RB is dead. You got to stack up running backs, and it's a response to what happened last year, which is historically it's the worst year for running backs and in particular running back fill-ins ever. So. These are all the guys who were just like miserable failures from the waiver wire. Malcolm Brown, Ty Johnson, Bo Scarborough, J.D. McKissic, Chase Edmonds, Benny Snell, Jalen Samuels. Like these were all guys, you know, Ito Smith, Brian Hill. These are all guys who commanded, you know, like big, big fab budgets. Not one of them ended up having, like a PPR running back one game. Chase Edmonds did, but it was with a David Johnson in-game injury. So it wasn't after the waiver bidding period. Of all the running backs drafted later than pick 100, this is true, only Ronald Jones, Carlos Hyde, and Raheem Mostert finished inside of the top 30 PPR scores at the running back position. Like we're talking like this was a holocaust for running back scoring. Like there was no good guys that came from the waiver wire. But this is not what we find in 2017 and 2018. We find like loads of performances of good injury fill-in running backs those years. So we have in 2018 just a couple guys: Damian Williams, Philip Lindsay, Isaiah Crowell, James Conner, C.J. Anderson all have multiple games of 20 plus PPR points. The same is true in 2017. Eight different running backs who have multiple games of 20 plus PPR points. So, what my question to you is. Is this a trend? Is 2019 the trend where it's just like we have too many teams playing three running backs for there ever to be good injury fill-in running backs? Or is 2019 a blip, right? Is it just one-year noise based on the running backs that did happen to get hurt that year?
I think it's a trend for – it's both, actually. I think it's a trend for this year. Like, we are certainly headed for more committees this year, which makes – I wouldn't even – maybe I consider Henry there. I don't even know if I consider Henry there, honestly. Probably the top five guys, you cut it off of Kamara. And like, those are the guys we know are not in committee.
Are just locked in.
Yeah. And if they are like Kamara, it doesn't matter because they're so efficient or so explosive at the one thing they do best. So that's fine. But for this year, I think that sticks. And so if that's the case, again, that's why everyone keeps quoting that zero RB is dead. However, for the bigger tournaments that we're playing against a bunch of people, thousands of entrants, I think that the way to zag what everyone zigs or vice versa is just by going zero RB and seeing what you can make. Even if you enter your draft with some kind of thought out zero RB rankings, like, okay, these are my guys in this order and I'm waiting until X round unless they fall to start there. And I'm just going to stack receivers and tight ends along the way. I think that's the way to do it. However, if you're just playing 10 to 12 man leagues, like recreationally, I don't think you even need to overthink it. Just go ahead.
That's true. That's a very good point.
The tried and true two or three quarterbacks, six or seven receivers, six or seven running backs, two or three tight ends. Don't stack the bye weeks on quarterbacks and tight ends. And I guarantee, like, any recreational player, even the $1 leagues, just doing that, you can have 5 to 10% ROI this year.
Yeah, that's actually probably a point that doesn't get talked about enough, that, like, the leagues where people are trying to play, like, super seriously for a lot of money are just – they're so much different than
– it's a DFS tournament. It's a lottery.
Yeah. No, that is – that. So that is a very good point. Like, I actually probably would take Derrick Henry at, like, eighth overall in – like, if I'm sitting there drafting with my buddies from home and I'm like, you know, I really just – I don't want to massively – mess this up and have them all make fun of me for missing the playoffs. Like, I'm just going to take Derrick Henry and have him grind out his 15 points a week or whatever. Like, that is a pretty good point.
I think the most recent example is last year's, you know, the FFPC playoff challenge, where you take one player for every playoff team and then you go like that. But everyone, the winner, of course, did not. But everyone else faded Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook because they were underdogs. They were going on the road. And they weren't favored to win their games, like, not even close. And then you know what happened. Dalvin Cook ran all over the Saints. And the Titans surged into the AFC Championship AFC Championship. And so, yeah, I mean, just taking those contrarian thoughts is kind of how you have to do it when everyone's doing one thing in these much bigger tournaments.
Okay, second on your list, Austin Hooper on the fades list. I'm definitely with this one, right? I don't think any of us really consider Austin Hooper a special player. We think a ton of his fantasy performance from 2019 was, like, role and team related. You know, they trade Mohamed Sanu, Calvin Ridley gets banged up. Like, there were a lot of things that funneled production into Austin Hooper. Do you want to make the pro case at all, or are you just with this one?
No, I totally agree with this one. He doesn't need content ideas from me. But Overzet, I will say, hasn't done a TikTok on better player on the field than in fantasy lineups.
Oh, love
it. That's the next one. And that just goes along with Austin Hooper. So a much better player for the Browns this year than he will be in fantasy.
Yeah, I completely agree. Just like, and what sucks is Hooper is on two of my very good, very competitive dynasty teams. Mm-hmm. And I feel sort of inclined to... Like, the time to sell him was last year in the middle of that run, and I kind of needed the points, so I didn't. And so it's just one of those, like, it always sucks in a dynasty league when you just have to watch the asset wither on the vine, when you're like, I need the points, there's not really anything I can do. Like, I just got to do this. It's never a good time.
Like, Harrison Bryant won't outperform Hooper this year. I mean, he may play over David Njoku this year. Who knows?
Could.
But like, I would say in, like, the next 4 years, it is definitely possible that Harrison Bryant just passes up Austin Hooper.
Yeah. Okay, our next guy, don't think there will be any arguments here. I mean, Leonard Fournette, like, they signed Chris Thompson. Everyone knew the deal, right? Everyone knew when they signed Chris Thompson that was just going to be that. There wasn't going to be because the whole reason that Fournette was good last year, it wasn't touchdowns or, like, his efficiency or anything. It was that they'd get down 20 points and they would just funnel targets to him, right? Whether it was Nick Foles, whether it was Gardner Minshew, they would just drop dump offs to him. And that's not going to happen. Chris Thompson is going to be on the field instead of him. Now, maybe he runs hot with touchdowns last year, but I always thought it was interesting, you know, because we talk a lot about touchdown regression and, you know, obviously Fournette, quote unquote, ran bad last year. But if you, like, dude, if you watch the film, right, you watch, I can't believe I just said that. But if you're, like, watching the plays where the Jaguars are trying to have Fournette score, he's never scoring on these plays in a million years. It's like, he's so slow and they're, like, throwing him tosses on the edge of the formation and he's just never getting there. Like, Fournette's just not good enough. You know what I mean? Like, I probably will not draft him one time this year on, you know, 100 plus teams or whatever.
I used both the PFF guide and Dane Brugler's The Beast when citing stats for our Roto-World draft blurbs on every single player. And people can go back and look at them if you want to. And one of my favorite stats that I recall that came from the entire draft guide was when I was writing up LaVisca Chenault. And only 25% of his targets at Colorado happened beyond the 10 yards, within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. Thus, saying that it's not only Chris Thompson, it's also LaVisca Chenault who's going to take away from Leonard Fournette.
Yep.
So it's just not the same role. And remember, this team can still save $2 million, 2.1, I think it is, to be exact, if they just cut Fournette. And that's certainly in the range of outcomes since name slips on mine, Tom
Coughlin.
Thank you. Tom Coughlin, who was the only person to vouch for him, is no longer there.
Yeah, and not only that, so Coughlin wasn't even the one who drafted him, but Coughlin liked him. Then there was the regime before that drafted him, spent the number 4 overall pick on him. So there are no Leonard Fournette defenders. Coaches, there's no Leonard Fournette people
literally
left
Coughlin
in the building.
The last one pounding his fist. He's gone. No one there is associated to that class whatsoever.
Yeah. All right. Our next guy here, Lamar Jackson. It's not that the high stakes players don't like Lamar Jackson. It's just that to secure his services, you're going to have to spend a second round pick on him in these leagues this year. And it's very, very hard to win a lot of money playing fantasy football when you're paying an ultra premium. Now, on the converse, I do think in industry leagues, like last year we did, like every year we do the Roto-World Friends and Family redraft league, where last year I took Deshaun Watson in the 8th round, I think. Like those leagues, the industry leagues where the quarterbacks fall 2, 3, 4 rounds, I actually think like Lamar Jackson in the 4th is probably fine, but in the 2nd round, do we think in August on like ESPN redraft ADP, do we think Lamar Jackson's going to go in the 1st round?
I wouldn't think so, but I'm pretty sure he's super safe in the 2nd. And I will say the only way I've been getting exposure to him is if I do start, or not even start, but let's say I get Andrews in the, or I guess it would have to be Lamar in the 2nd and Andrews in the 3rd. If like at the beginning of the 1st round, I know I can have CMC, and then on that comeback, I'll go Lamar if he's even there. Sometimes he's gone at the end of the 2nd round. And then Mark Andrews, and just provide that stack to start with. However, we also know in FBG drafts, just the football guys drafts, quarterbacks go late. And so the only guys going within those 4 rounds are Lamar and Patrick Mahomes. Other than that, even Russ, you see going in the 8th round or later most of the time. So it just makes zero sense in those types of leagues to grab him. However, again, and like probably higher stakes leagues in August, it's going to become so sharp to fade Lamar Jackson that maybe the contrarian approach would actually be to take him in the 3rd round.
Take him in the 3rd round. Yeah.
And thus have that floor that everyone else was trying to fade.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Number 5, it's very hard for me. This is a moral quandary for me because I love Mike Evans. I've been in on Mike Evans literally every year of his career since he was a rookie, like always ranked him higher than ADP, always drafted him, ahead of where he was going, been a huge part of my portfolio. But that was because he's always played with Jameis Winston and Ryan Fitzpatrick and other, gunslinging quarterbacks. Tom Brady, not a gunslinger. If you were going to find two guys who were like really bad style fits for one another, it would be, quick slant Brady and, go and get at Mike Evans. Like, I mean, the last time that Brady made a guy who played like Mike Evans useful in fantasy would have been Randy Moss, right? Like, when is the last time we saw an outside wide receiver excel in New England? Like, it literally was Randy Moss, like the crazy record-breaking season.
Well, the successful players, all that I polled, were just genuinely down on the Bucs as a whole. And yeah, it's funny, I think there's reason for that because, like, we are all arguing, like, how deep the Bucs can go into the playoffs when maybe we should be arguing, like, is Tom Brady done?
That's what I think. I think Tom Brady's closer to cooked. Yeah.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. Like, everyone's kind of scared to say it. Like, we're all talking about over 9.5 wins instead. Whereas, like, hey, maybe Brady's arm is just cooked, like you said. And I have some notes at the end of this column. And one of my favorite ones that I inserted in there when I gathered from everyone, I couldn't believe it, is that so the Bucs led the way with the most points scattered about through the entire team. Rob Gronkowski, 11 points as the most overrated, as one of the most overrated tight ends. Tom Brady, 9 points. Keyshawn Vaughn, 4. Ronald Jones, 2. Chris Godwin, 1. And of course, Evans is the one that landed highest on this list because we don't believe his skill set meshes with Brady. Now, another TikTok idea would simply be, what if he's too good to go away? Like, because Evans is probably too good to go away. He's an elite talent that he still, for some reason, after 6 years of 1,000 yards receiving, does not get credit for at all, since Chris Godwin is the shiny new toy. But again, I also don't think his skill set meshes with Brady at all. And so that's the only reason, and literally the only reason I picked Godwin over Evans.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Godwin is just going to be the guy who gets the Julian Edelmans, right? Like that. I mean, that's just the way it goes. I guess I did see some recent conjecturing that because Scotty Miller and Justin Watson are more like they're maybe not ready. Like the thing that makes the most sense for their base personnel would be OJ Howard, Rob Gronkowski, which would transition Godwin back into being an outside wide receiver. I think it was Scott Barrett that was tweeting the stuff the other day about how some of the Buccaneers beat writers are conjecturing that he might move back to being a perimeter wide receiver, which, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be a disaster, but it would definitely be a different role that people are projecting him in right now, for sure.
And I know Scotty Miller is right now favored to actually play over Tyler Johnson, despite the fact that Tyler Johnson fits better in the slot on that team. Because since Chris Godwin, that's where he's going to stay. So yeah, I mean, if Scotty Miller does play, he would take away from Evans. However, yeah, I mean, even with the numbers, like I said, Evans is a leading enough talent, or maybe it doesn't even matter. Maybe we're just
doing
it
wrong,
and you just get an edge by matching your Godwin shares with your Evans shares, just in case.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Okay, next guy. Don't even really, like, I have no counterpoint to this. Just Aaron Jones, same bucket as Leonard Fournette to me. I mean, Jones is a better player. Jones will have more of a pass catching role, but even last year when he was just crushing all the touchdowns, he was still only playing like 55-60% of the snaps for the Packers. Now they've added in AJ Dillon, who low-end projection steals like 3 of the rushing touchdowns for the Packers. High-end, he becomes like the straight-up goal line back for them. I don't really see a compelling reason to make Aaron Jones like a big part of your draft strategy.
And remember that he got those career-high 285 touches because Jamal Williams was not just banged up for like one game. Jamal Williams was constantly banged up last year. But when he was healthy for full games, he was playing over 30% of their snaps. It was still a timeshare, despite the fact that Aaron Jones is the much better player. That's not even the point we're arguing here. It's just the fact that Jamal Williams will likely stay healthy. They just had put high draft capital into A.J. Dillon. Dexter Williams, for whatever it's worth, is still around as a high draft capital player as well. Right. And then, yeah, as they move to a more run-oriented attack, like if we're spreading the wealth here and Jones isn't the guy that meshes well on the goal line, because remember, Jamal Williams is the one catching passes inside the 5 last year. It's just it's really easy. It's kind of been dumbed down now to say, oh, just positive regression, bro. I mean, or regression, that's all it is. But, I mean, it kind of is just like, hey, you're not going to get a career high.
I mean, yeah, he just ran hot, and now he has more obstacles to, like, continuing to run hot.
19 touchdowns were not just, like, a sparkling number. That was the third most. Think about how long the Packers have been in around. Like, they've been in Madison, Wisconsin, with that one strip club at the corner and, like, one chicken shop across the street. Like, they've been there for 40 years or whatever now. So, like, the third most touchdowns in franchise history is such a, like, number you can't even comprehend since that franchise has been around so long.
Yep. Yeah. Couldn't agree more with that position. So, not in on Aaron Jones. Darren Waller, this is a controversial one because, like, the main reason it's controversial is the people who benefited from Darren Waller last year feel very proud of themselves because it was sort of like a – you know, you kind of had to read the tea leaves. You had to do the math and see that there actually were all of these targets available. Mm-hmm. Like, especially the people who have Darren Waller in Dynasty, like, they don't want it to be true that, like, his best case scenario is, like, a 20% target share. But his best case is, like, a 20% target share. So they signed Jason Witten, who, you know, obviously terrible signing, but, like, he's going to play. Right, like they didn't sign Jason Witten to be a coach. If they wanted to sign him to be
he's
a coach,
just like Frank Gore, like those guys always find ways to overplay their stay.
Yep, and Foster Moreau still on the roster. Derek Carrier still on the roster. Those guys will eat up some snaps, some targets, but that's not even really why his role is going to be diminished. His role is going to be diminished because they draft Henry Ruggs, they draft Bryan Edwards, His playing time already, like his target share already took a huge dip when Hunter Renfrow was in the lineup. Like, basically what happened is that he smashed to start the year, Darren Waller did, and just kind of, it's kind of like the anchor effect with him where people remember how good he was to start the year. And then as the year progressed, his target share kind of diminished and he was less and less reliable. But people mostly just remember how great he was to start the year. So Waller, again, with how deep the tight end position goes with like upside guys, you know, Fant, Gesicki, Hawkinson, Gott, like, I mean, there's a laundry list of young tight ends. So you can tell yourself like, oh, this guy's going to finish tight end four. I'm just not in on Waller.
See, I'm not in on Waller, and where I've kind of settled on is that I'm not in on like six tight end six through 10. Waller, Henry, Hooper. I think Ingram, it rounds out my top five, but in having all of those guys with question marks, I've kind of just settled on Mike Gesicki as like my tight end six. And yep. Only because I don't trust the others, whether it's because they move teams, whether it's because they've added more mouths to feed, like Waller's case. That's the only reason I've settled on Gesicki and just waiting, as opposed to trying to battle, like Higbee even, trying to battle for those guys in that range.
Yeah, it's like Higbee, dude, like Higbee's going to be playing, like, I don't, the Tyler Higbee thing is like, wow, he had a great run, very good for him, I'm very
amazing
proud of him.
Run.
Yeah, but I don't buy it as like a long-term, like, Tyler Higbee's Gronk West. Like, it's just, I don't buy it, you know?
And that's the same thing for Waller, same thing for Hooper. Who knows with Hunter Henry's offense around him now? And that's why it's just like, those question marks built up now after we've all done enough research over the last month or so. It's like, okay, like, this, I see what's happening here. Why don't I just grab the guy that's being used as a receiver? Like, Gesicki led his position in slot rate last year. I'll just take him instead. F it.
Yeah. All right, next guy I disagree with because I disagree with – what's that?
This one hurt, by the way.
Yeah. So this guy is Courtland Sutton, and the reason why I disagree is because I disagree with the logic being used by the faders, which is that Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler, Albert O, Melvin Gordon, that these guys are going to significantly change how involved Courtland Sutton is in the offense, and – there are a couple reasons for this. One, and this is going to be a crutch argument, by the way, people are going to use COVID-19 and like its impact on playbooks and training camps and everything. They're going to use it to suit whatever their argument is. So if it's like, if it's the case that they don't like the rookie, they're going to be like, oh, well, the rookie's not going to have enough playing time. If they do like the young player, they're going to be like, practice times aren't that long anyways. We have more ways to modern learn. These guys have been Skyping, you know, like people will use it however they want to. In the case of Courtland Sutton, I actually just think it's as simple as Jerry Jeudy is not the guy that profiles to me to come in and immediately be like AJ Brown, right? Like he's more of like a finesse guy. Like he runs a lot of, like he's going to run a lot of timing routes. Like it's just going to me, Jerry Jeudy is the type of guy who is going to ease into an NFL career, not going to come in and dominate right away. And I think obviously that benefits Courtland Sutton, but also Sutton is going to get all the good targets, right? Sutton's going to get end zone targets. He's going to get deep targets. And I think if you leave his target share roughly the same, and just cut out a ton of the inefficient stuff Denver was doing last year. Like, do yourself a favor, people listening to this podcast, go look at all the targets that backup tight ends got in Denver last year. Like Andrew Beck, Troy Fumagalli, like these guys were playing loads of snaps in Denver. And they're just going to be more efficient overall. So I am still in on Sutton this season.
Okay, so a lot of comments here. One, the most said comment whenever people mention Courtland Sutton, whenever I received emails back, were love the player, hate the situation. Everyone loves watching Courtland Sutton play. He plays a lot like a more explosive Vincent Jackson, just a dominating player as a true
very
breakout.
Good comp.
Yeah, as a true breakout last year. So good for him. However, that wasn't my argument. I've been fading him as well. My argument is against Drew Lock. And I really thought it was going to be a hotter take. But even Drew Lock's ADP really hasn't budged much.
It stayed the same.
Yeah, he's kind of going as like QB 18. He started out like as QB 24, borderline two, and he's increased a little bit, but he's not even coming close to like a QB 1, which is where I thought he maybe would finish as in August, and maybe still could. But there aren't enough like hot takes out there trying to drive up his ADP. And for me, he just made Sutton and the offense worse last year. The Broncos had the second easiest schedule. They had the fourth easiest passing schedule in Drew Lock's five starts. And yet Cortland Sutton only averaged 7 yards per target and was supported more with more targets in his range from Joe Flacco and Brandon Allen than Lock gave him. And so I just question Lock's potential as a whole, knowing that John Elway hasn't been the greatest quarterback prognosticator, is still riding the coattails of dwindling Peyton Manning getting that Super Bowl somehow over Carolina's defense, or I guess I should say the Broncos defense getting that Super Bowl. And so, yeah, I'm just worried about that offense genuinely as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable to just be like, this is a lot of responsibility to be putting on Drew Lock, and maybe he's not ready for it, right?
But for your argument, though, I will say it also attests to your rookie crutch argument, because like Sutton at least has already worked with Drew Lock, so that won't be an issue. So if it does come true, and perhaps this offseason is an issue for rookies coming in because they aren't getting to work with their quarterback so much, that wouldn't be the case for Sutton because he's already done it.
Yeah, exactly right. Like that. Yeah. That's really what it comes down to. Is this is going to be a lot harder for Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler than it's going to be for Cortland Sutton, who has played with these coaches, played with these offensive coordinators, played with Drew Lock, played with, you know, I mean, Deshaun Hamilton's probably not going to make the team, but you know, it's just going to be an easier situation for him to succeed in.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but so like, where do you have Cortland Sutton ranked?
I will go look that up right now. I bet it's pretty high. I bet it is, but maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm going to guess that I have him.
Even I came in a little higher than I thought I would. I believe is my wide receiver 19, and that's only because then you start getting to the guys like Stephon Diggs, who also love but like hate the situation, honestly, because you have a receiver with a similar profile on the other side who's already worked with Josh Allen. And let's see here.
Yeah, I'm really high on Sutton right now in half PPR, which is just like the standard one that I put out. I have him 14, so that's like explicitly disagreeing with what is in your column, which is that people would rather have him than Robert Woods, rather have him than Ridley. I actually think probably I'm going to move this right now. I'm going to move Shark to 15 because I think like Sutton, you could say Jeudy is the next Julio Jones or whatever. Like Sutton is, to me, still projects as like a clear 1A wide receiver, like 25% target share no matter what type guy.
Roto World's Hayden Winks is like the highest I've heard on anyone on Jeudy. Yeah, Jeudy is an elite route runner. But Hayden thinks he's so talented that like his skill set bucks anything Drew Lock would try to undo. Like he just thinks he's the ultimate player, which could be true. I still think though he struggles to fit in this offense, at least in year one.
Yeah, I think that is likely to be the case. All right, number nine. Love the player, hate the situation. I actually do agree with this one. AJ Brown is just like, there's no way you can carve out enough targets for him to pay off his ADP right now, unless he averages like 19 fantasy points per target again in 2020.
Everyone forgets, like we just saw it. Three postseason games totaled 5 catches for 64 yards. Because that's what that offense is.
That's what they do.
When everything is clicking, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that, hey, are you really going to trust his, I think it was 6 targets per game for Ryan Tannehill, which is nothing considering like he used that to become like a top 20 wide receiver over that last stretch of the season. It's just the volume just isn't there and won't be there if they tank. And if that's the case, then you have to reassess what you believe in Henry, because he's not going to be on the field if they're tanking, or not tanking, but if they're not performing well. So. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with that Titans offense, but at the end of the day, AJ Brown just doesn't get the volume.
Yeah, it's just not like he's being ranked and drafted amongst guys who might out target him by like literally 40 or 50 passes. Like no hyperbole. Yeah, like that's a real thing. 10A, couldn't agree more. Devin Singletary, like the team is not saying anything encouraging about drafting Zach Moss. They're basically like, yeah, we want Zach Moss to come in and be like Frank Gore plus, and then leave Devin Singletary in his role. So it's just not, and we were expecting that offense to regress a little bit, just because maybe not even regress, but we expect that offense to have really wide ranges of outcomes because Josh Allen has super wide ranges of outcomes.
Yeah. And I know there's been a a lot of talk about whether it's Singletary or Moss. I still think it's Singletary. I still just don't know, though, how many of the fruitful goal line reps, which will ultimately allow him to untap his ceiling, how much actually fall to him. Like Moss,
right.
Plus, as we all know, as Reeves once dubbed, Josh Allen is their goal line back. And I think that's kind of what separates Singletary from all the other guys.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, final guy here, DeAndre Hopkins. I don't feel strongly about this either way. Like, I would probably rather not draft him just because there are other really good options around him. The logic here is interesting to me, which is that new wide receiver on a new team is generally a fraught situation, and it might be more fraught this offseason due to, you know, team stuff, not working out with the quarterback, so on, so forth. And, I mean, I think that you could even take it a step further and say the air raid is, in general, is all about not force feeding one guy 10 targets a game and literally just throwing it to who's open. So that's not the situation that Hopkins has ever been in. He's always been clearly the top dog.
I wonder on the volume, like obviously maybe he does, but I would say he doesn't get that 30% target share. As you said, the air raid tends to scatter it out. However, I think the efficiency will still be there. That's why I struggled to move him from my wide receiver 5. I still think he is in the big 5. Although I do listen to arguments whenever, like for instance, here, overrated. Mostly everyone has him overrated because they think he's a low end wide receiver 1 as opposed to a high end 1, which is more than reasonable. But it takes a little of assumption, but Kyler Murray's like deep ball rate last year, passes over 20 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, finished 23rd overall among starters last year. But I don't think that's because Kyler Murray doesn't want nor can he throw deep. I just think whenever you're throwing to Pharaoh Cooper and Trent Sherfield for half your targets, you can't throw deep. And now you have possibly Andy Isabella or Hakeem Butler, whatever you want to do, with DeAndre Hopkins now on the boundary, it already makes a much better supporting cast that Kyler Murray already turned into gold last year. Like the 8th hardest schedule and still finished, or 12th hardest schedule and still finished as a – let me make sure I get this right. It is the – they had the – yeah, 8th hardest schedule and he still finished as a top 10 quarterback. So
now, I mean, Kyler's a baller. I don't think Kyler is the problem at all, right?
You don't need to cite the numbers. He's a baller, and now he has DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, and that's why it's hard to get away from Hopkins, because the offense is good. This isn't a bad receiver going to Jacksonville. This is one of the best
or a receiver going to Cleveland, which is like the comparable you're calling is Odell Beckham. We're like, I mean, what did you want him to do? Like, Baker sucked last year, right? Yeah. What did you want him to do? He just wasn't. Exactly. And I like Baker, but he wasn't good. You know?
This is Hopkins going to a much better offense with a much better quarterback, with a coach who showed last year he's willing to change his game plans to make things work. And yes, they became the horizontal attack last year, but that I assume that won't be the case at all with these pieces in place now.
I mean, you hope that Cliff spent the offseason in the lab being like, I have Kyler Murray. I don't have David Johnson, who can't run the ball anymore. Like, I'm going to be able to score points, right? Like, I'm not going to stop kicking field goals, you know? And I mean, at a certain point, yeah, like he had Damir Bird and Pharaoh Cooper to work with, and Christian Kirk was banged up, and you know, things are hopefully going to be different for them this season. So I am in on that.
It needs to be baked into everyone's projections, not so much the target share, but how much better will the efficiency be from Kyler Murray? Like, if Hopkins can support Brandon Weeden and Tom Savage, of course he could support Kyler Murray in this offense.
Yeah. All right. Last two guys I want to talk about are the 49ers running backs, both Tevin Coleman and Raheem Mostert. I fell for the trap with Damian Williams last season of the undrafted free agent running back who goes on the scathing run to end the year. I actually still think that was fine. The team clearly valued Damian as their starting running back and LeSean McCoy as the insurance guy. Damian got hurt at the beginning of the season and kind of forced their hand. So I'm not going to hold that big of an L on that one. Mostert to me, though, really does feel like just got hot at the right time. Team feels no allegiance to him. And this is actually true. Jeff Collins is co-manager in all of his high stakes leagues. I don't know if he probably doesn't want his name on these or anything, but I'm in a league with Jeff Collins and his buddy who are huge 49ers fans. And they have been in these dynasty leagues trading for Jerick McKinnon. They've been using like future fourths and stuff to trade for Jerick McKinnon. So these are guys who know what's going on, who are big 49ers fans, who probably have some sort of relationship or knowledge of what's going on with the team. And people even forget he's on the team, right? That Jerick McKinnon's on the team. But there are a lot of different ways for Raheem Mostert to not get injured and still lose carries and work in 2020.
So I've been stacking up Tevin Coleman. I don't have much Jerick McKinnon in best ball just yet. I will now after you say that. But I've just been taking the easy way out and going Coleman because he's going to sprinkle in week winning weeks. Like, we know this.
He had a 4-touchdown game last year.
And he even led one of their playoff games in touches over Raheem Mostert. We know they're going to continue the hot hand approach. They continue saying that. So, of course, it can be Coleman for a few weeks. And as he continues being drafted 2 or 3 rounds after Mostert, it just makes sense to get Coleman. TJ Hernandez at 4-for-4 did an amazing article, and he put it like the best way possible, is that Mostert and Coleman are best ball heaven but redraft hell, because good luck figuring it out in the regular season when you have to make lineup choices. But for best ball, like, why not grab both, or at least one? You just have to factor in Mostert's ADP, and that's where the argument comes in, because, you know, at the tail end of the 5th round, early 6th round, it's still probably too early for a guy who we assume will only lead in touches 6 to 8 weeks, maybe. I don't think that's
right. Yeah. So there we go. There are some fades. There are some fades from dudes who are playing, you know, lots and lots and lots of fantasy football. I don't agree with it unilaterally, but I think it also, I think just, we should talk real quick. Last thing is from an overall strategy perspective, if you are one of the sickos like John or I, who are going to be doing, you know, literally hundreds of drafts, I actually do think it makes sense to selectively just not draft some guys. Like, don't have exposure to literally everyone, because it, you know, it's the same thing as like, you know, just having 6% of everyone in DFS. Like, you don't want to be the dude paying the rake. You want to set yourself up to either have a very good season or like a truly if you lose, you lose, right? But you'd rather set yourself up to bank.
And then don't abide by rankings as a blueprint either. Just treat them as a way of thought. You know, for instance, like, I'll be taking, like, I've seen Kenyon Drake, for instance, taking over Dalvin Cook in some drafts as a top 5 player. And that's not because they believe he's that. That's just because they need to work. Players need to work in the Cardinal stack in some way and make sure they Cook in there and make sure they get Drake. And then you run it back with Hopkins if he falls, and then Kyler Murray in the third, just to get that Cardinal stack in. So just go about it as if you know you can shift around rankings. Take a more tiers approach instead and draft like that to build the portfolio.
Yeah, 100%. All right, man. What else do we have coming up from you on RotoWorld? What should people be looking forward to? The Friday shot series with Ian?
Oh, we need to stop that immediately. But Friday Night Best Ball, we do a show on Twitch every Friday night, 7 p.m. We have the capability now to start getting guests on, so we're working on that. But twitch.tv/RotoWorld every Friday, 7 p.m. I'll tweet a link out like 5 minutes beforehand if you want to jump in. Sometimes we just play FFPC leagues online with other players. But either way, jump in the chat, join us. Also, subscribe to the RotoWorld Football Podcast. And because I'm a company shill, also NBC Sports, 11:40 to noon Eastern every weekday. We are on TV, Ian, Josh, and I.
There we go. Everyone, follow John at NotJohnDaigle. Head over to RotoWorld.com.
Twitter handle still ever.
Yeah. Well, dude, you work for NBC. How are you not verified yet?
We're working on that. But also, like, when you're in the game a decade, like, I've had this account since 2009, and it used to be important just to, like, I want to be anonymous. Worst business decision ever, by the way.
Not now great.
I'm stuck with not Jay Daigle. So.
Yeah, tough scenes.
Tough scenes.
All right, everyone. Follow John. Read RotoWorld. We will be back soon with more deep fantasy football content for everyone.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.